And we're live.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of Fans of Power here. I'm Tyler T-Rex Baker. And, of course, as always, we have the mighty Amato, Joe Amato here. Joe?
How's it going, everyone?
This Easter Sunday here.
Doing fantastic. And, yeah, happy Easter to you. Happy Easter to everybody that's listening. And, yeah, we're going to have a good time today.
Absolutely. And there will be a whole lot of... Not to date this episode, we are obviously recording live on an Easter Sunday here, but they'll always make sure that our episodes are not dated, so they're always rewatchable for all occasions. But there will be an Easter theme kind of going out throughout this episode this week, but not so much to the point that, you know what, I'm going to go back and watch that particular episode they did. You won't feel like you're watching like a holiday special or something like that, you know?
Exactly. Like you said, there could be somewhat of, if you will, Easter themes, but... It's still something, just like you said, you can watch it anytime because it's not going to be talking particular about Easter, but something is, when fans hear what we have to say, you'll see why we picked the two particular themes to kind of like, in a way, mesh with Easter. Since there is no Easter with Eternia, you know, I don't think we've seen nothing like that before.
No, and I don't think that's something that needs to be brought up on Eternia. I'm like, I don't, you know, it's a stretch to think that they're going to have Christmas on Eternia, you know, but... I don't like to think that, you know, other holidays can be celebrated on Eternia. I'm like, no, we don't need to. Next thing you know, He-Man will be talking, you know, like he's, you know, he's got street slang and stuff like that, acting like Vin Diesel in this god-awful Fast movies or something like that. You know? I ain't having it.
And we already see how a lot of fans already reacted to the Christmas special. You have some that love it, and some people say, oh, God, Christmas on Eternia. That was terrible. So you're right.
And I think that's something that if everybody had seen that as a kid, which I only got to see a commercial for it and didn't get to see it at 5 years old when I saw the commercial for it, I definitely sympathize with people who absolutely love the Christmas special because I desperately wanted to see it so bad. And I know I would have cherished it greatly had I seen it as a kid, but not seeing it until I was in high school, it definitely doesn't have the same effect on me. It's not like one of those episodes of He-Man that I didn't like as a kid, but I understand it and appreciate it a lot more, and it grows on you more, and you find there's more to this episode than I saw as a kid. Whereas the Christmas special, it just has that they can't be charmed to. They either you roll with it or you roll away from it, one or the other.
Yeah, I went with it. I mean, I loved the Christmas special when it came out, because like I said, it was bringing together, of course, your love of Masters of the Universe, and then Christmas. What kid didn't love Christmas? So, I mean, for me, it just worked. I mean, we're talking about sitting here thinking of other themes that could even work on Eternia, which, you're right, I can't think of many. Me, I'm a sucker for Halloween.
The idea of Borgo's running around the palace with a mask on and getting, you know, treats from people, but some sort of, you know, Skeletor and Scareglow resurrecting ghosts from the graveyard or something from,
you it know, can work.
From the past or something like that. You know, some sort of, I don't know, but not so much to where, you know, they're talking about, no, now, you know, the moral of the episode is make sure you check your apples for razor blades and stuff like that, kid.
No, but it could work, yeah, because that's weird. You said Halloween at the same time I said Halloween. That's the only other thing I could think of that could work and could make a fun episode. But we'll make something interesting from this episode, Easter-themed, but without really being Easter. So, well, T-Rex, what did you want to start off with? Which one? And then you can go into it. And I'm sure right when fans hear it, they're going to know immediately why it's Easter.
Well, since you put it that way, I guess we should go with our commentary for this week.
Okay.
And we're going to do at Joe's request here, which, you know, obviously I understood why he requested it. I certainly wouldn't have requested it whether it was Easter or not. But it's Quest for He-Man featuring the... I really don't know how people take this character, because I almost feel like people think it's cute and funny to think he's a great lousy villain, or people think he's actually really cool, or...
They just hate him.
They hate him. I feel like I've never been quite sure to get the feedback, because when this episode is brought up, people are like, oh, man, it's great. I'm like, are you saying it's great because you don't like it? Like, it's great in a bad way? Or you're saying, like, this is a fantastic character. I can't believe this. This guy should have came out. Like, I've never been able to figure out what the hell fans are talking about when they get excited about this, because it's known as a very underwhelming episode. Now, it's, you know, for – you know, as we'll get into it, we'll save a lot of that. But it's just never something I've never been able to figure out from people. I mean, when the Classics figure was released, a lot of people were pissed off, which showed me, okay, clearly the character's not If for anyone who's wondering, we're talking about Plum Doors, if you hadn't figured it out already.
Right.
You know, and obviously, you know, I think given what the character looks like, why we're doing a commentary on that today. But just something I've never been able to figure. I remember it was on the I think it was on the top 10 He-Man DVD that came out before BCI released the volumes of the two seasons. And I couldn't remember, why the hell is this episode a top 10 episode? I was so mad.
Really?
At the time. And I think people thought it was cute and funny. Because they all thought it was a lousy episode, so let's put it in the top 10. It's like, God forbid, a person comes along and sees this in the local Walmart. Top 10 episodes? I'll check these out. Like, why the hell is this rabbit episode a top 10 episode?
And you know, that's a shame, because I know people that hate Plundor. And I'll admit, as a kid, I never really liked him. And I never found him frightening. But for whatever reason, I did enjoy this episode, which, once we get into talking about, you'll hear why things kind of resonated with me. But there was just certain things that happened in this episode that, I don't know, it just had a feeling that was interesting, that was different. That, of course, it's always the thought of what would happen if somebody... well, I don't want to ruin it. I'll wait till we get started, and then as we're commentating, then I can explain stuff. But I did enjoy this episode. Plundor? No, I never liked him. But I did enjoy the episode itself. It was an interesting story. I mean, the story was pretty good. But I guess once we fire it up, we'll, you know, explain why. But whenever you're ready, we could fire up. We'll do the 3, 2, 1, and fans, if you want. And this is Quest for He-Man, and of course, again, like last time, if fans can't find this, I mean, if they don't have the DVD box set, you can go right to YouTube, type in Quest for He-Man, dual screen it, put the episode on, put our podcast on, and you can hear our commentary during the show.
And, you know, I'm playing down. I got my DVD set where, like, the letter F has showed up on the Filmation logo has barely started. So I'll be hitting play as the logo is starting to run across the screen, just so you're synced up with us. And I'll just count down from 3. When I say play, hit play as well. So 3, 2, 1, play. And of course, you've got the classic Filmation logo going there. And as the most epic title sequence begins, I guess my first time seeing this episode was purchasing a previously viewed Volume 17 of the He-Man VHS tape that was supposed to feature Evil Seed and Wizards of Stone Mountain, and instead featured, it was Volume 16, which featured this episode and a Double-Edged Sword. And when I thought, oh my gosh, this is a tape I've never seen before. I wonder if Too Bad's going to be in this. And that was my only focus for that tape, was I was hoping I would see an episode I'd never seen that finally had Too Bad in it. So I see Double-Edged Sword, and I'm like, Trap Jaw becomes strong as hand, that's kind of cool. And then I come across this episode, and I'm like, ooh, this starts out so awesome. This is pretty cool. And if I was an alcoholic, I would have thrown my beer bottle across the wall and broke it. You know, it just I was so disappointed to not see Too Bad, and I get this chicken lady and a purple rabbit. I'm like, what the hell is this?
Well, for me, there's a particular – everybody will see in a bit, but there was a particular character that popped up, because I remember seeing it when it was first live on TV. So when I seen this one character in particular for the first time in this episode, I lost my mind, because I was like, oh my God, he's in an episode.
Well, that too was something special, because I had not seen him in the cartoon as well. And
exactly.
This is a great opening sequence here, getting to see Triclops and Trapjaw working together with their
work. Right to the point, too. Right, yeah. In action. Just right there, blasting right at the palace and everything to try to get their attention. You're wondering what's going on. But, man, I mean, there was no wasting time. They're coming right at the palace. They're trying to get He-Man's attention. And, of course, you know, you're going to see here in a couple minutes we're going to get them. But, yeah, they wasted no time. This is one of those episodes that, like I said, I think that's what was exciting for me as a kid, is it was right to the point. And action was going on immediately. There wasn't like a lot of sitting there talking or stuff that was boring. Not saying the episodes are boring when they do that, but you weren't getting that. You were getting right to the start. And He-Man with this classic whistling to bring in the wind raid. I always love that he whistles and brings in any vehicle or anything.
I always bought that. I never questioned. Like, what, you know, the wind raid's not a dog. You know, I was like, I roll with it, man. This is the word of Eternia, man. Anything, yep, like that. Possible. So it's,
and then Orko should have flew right past there when he was floating, because he would. Never mind. I won't get into.
Oh, see, there goes Joe with his goofy ass logic.
I was like, okay, he's just floating. He's not flying. I mean, he's going 100 miles. But whatever. So He-Man tells him to hold on. You, oh God, you got to make sure you hold on to this, because yeah, that's true. You better hold or you're gonna go zipping. But
I love seeing Triclops getting used. I mean, it's very little, but I was so happy when I saw this. I'm like, it's so great to see Triclops getting some screen time. Unfortunately, it's short-lived, but it's cool to see, him and Trapjaw working together, causing chaos just to be a distraction, something to kind of get He-Man away from the palace and obviously
Yeah,
Lucy.
and Ram-Man getting his flying time, if you will, and you see that because I thought, man, he's really up high. Well, I guess they explain how he came low with that parachute because Ram-Man got his ups there. But you're right, it was good. You get to see Trapjaw and Triclops right from the start. You get to see the Wind Raider blasting, energy beams out of its, main base part towards the front. But yeah, because I always thought, where was the grappling hook? I always remember that. I was like, where's the grappling hook? So you kind of see it in this episode, which will be coming up here soon, but this grappling hook looked
It's used
different.
in similar fashion to the grappling hook, like the one when He-Man gets a
Yeah.
hold of Trapjaw.
Well, like this. See when how it comes out? It came out like it was a real hard thing, but then you must see that this hard, rigid cable must become like a loose cable because then you've seen it kind of flopping there. I got kind of confused. I remembered as a kid, I thought it was going to be like a drill that was destroying the back of,
Yeah,
his
that's what I
guy.
thought too.
Yeah.
But this is this sequence coming up right now as He-Man lands and Trapjaw's,
I
taunting
love
to come
it.
after him. I just knowing what's coming and like I it's I, this is it's such a short-lived sequence and it's such a promising start for an episode that you're not quite sure where this is going other than He-Man's obviously going to stop Trapjaw and then it's just great to see Skeletor beat He-Man successfully in this episode and
Yeah, because
it's
boom.
doesn't much, but it's legitimate. It works,
Yeah, I love it. He
on
gets
all
caught in
cylinders.
that trap right there. Because as you see, Trapjaw is leading him in, and he gets stuck into some force field between something. And here's the whole plan: Skeletor is gonna wipe out He-Man's memory, and then send him away. But that's see, this is what I mean.
I love this. Him standing defiantly towards him, and this look on Skeletor's face coming up right here.
Yeah.
Very, I mean. It's like he's scowling at him, like he knows I've got you, and I'm really enjoying this particular moment here. It's just very, very villainous of Skeletor here,
Yeah, and
and
you see as he.
I just enjoy this whole sequence here, and just and it's like once after Skeletor successfully does it, it's just kind of like I did it, but he's not. Really, it's not like he's really relishing. It's like he knew it was going to be successful almost. And it's like, okay, well, I've got that taken care of.
Yeah,
You've
he
done what you
did.
came
That's
for.
what I mean. I loved it, like with the ease of what he did, how he wiped his memory. As you see, he just is now sending him just to another world, another dimension. You don't even know where He-Man's at, which, again, watching this for the first time on TV, when you're a kid
Yeah.
watching these things are frightening because you're. It's always interesting when He-Man does. Sure, you want to see He-Man have the upper hand, but when these scenarios come up to where something happens to him, you are scared as a kid because you're thinking, what's going to happen to my main hero? What's going to happen to him? He's been zapped away. He doesn't have his memory. I mean, he's been sent. How are they going to get to him? And that's what I loved about it. Like I said, it does from the start. It just from the get-go. It's just nonstop action. And then, of course, everybody comes there at the end to try to come help. You see how all the villains are just disappearing, flying away. Orko had his little time to shine. I like that because it showed he's not always a bumbler, if you will, with his magic. He made Trapjaw's gun do the bang thing, shooting out that, little bang out of his gun. I like that. It just showed that Orko, yes, he can have his magic work, I guess, when they want it to work.
Well, when the writers call for it here, and speaking of writers, we have the great Paul Dini writing this particular episode, which I gotta say, Paul's written pretty much at most, I'd say all but this one. And I know that a lot of the episodes that were written don't, as stated in James Etoch's books, is that some of them were looked upon as that they didn't translate well to screen from the page as well as, I guess, as they were thinking. And this is looked at as one of those. You could just kind of feel like the tone of this episode, and then again I don't know what they were really pushing for because you once
Oh, but here it
they get
comes, Tyler. Hold on, here it comes. This is what it's all about. Because they figured that Sorceress doesn't know, but there's one person that can do it. There's one person that can help them find where He-Man's at. And that person is going to be Zodak. And oh man, when he showed up, I lost it. I remember, like I said, I was a kid. I was like, Zodak, Zodak's in this episode. But you hear he's like, you know, he won't interfere. He's always that neutral party. But he'll eventually, as you're going to see coming up, he's going to give a wand to Orko and Orko will be able to do it. But I like how Zodak basically is going to say he can help in a way, but he's not going to help. But, you know, I wanted more of him. That's, you know, like I said, once I seen him here, I thought, oh, we're going to get tons. And, you know, we didn't get more of them, which was a disappointment. But picture that as a kid when you finally get to see that toy that you had and you see this guy pop up with a different look, you know. He's not looking just like the toy. You know, he doesn't have the clawed feet and he's got now white gloves. He's got boots, but and he's darker. And I told you, there was not many Italian people you could see on TV. I used to make Zodak Italian. I was like, well, I can relate to like, you know, Zodak. I'll put him in, you know, even though I am not the darkest, my dad, he's pitch black Italian. But I like that. I like seeing Zodak just be kind of darker. So that was my, like, a little connection with Zodak, if you will, which made it cool.
Understandable.
Yep, and of course now you're seeing He-Man. He's on this world he knows nothing about. You've seen those little things that look like jumping sperms or something, but they're Shminovitz. You're going to find out what their names are, those little things.
Yeah, and here's this character is probably the worst of this episode. I this Gleedle character I'd never cared for, this chicken bird beat lady. I just thought this was such a terrible design.
I agree with you. Even as a kid, when I seen Gleedle, I didn't like her look at all. Even though, like, right here, as you're going to see, He-Man says, you remind me of somebody. It's like, okay, because of a bird, a chicken, and then the sorceress, you know, a falcon. But I never liked Gleedle's look. She looked generic. She reminded me of something out of a Looney Tunes cartoon. I didn't feel her design.
A lot of Filmation, like, the Shminovitz, I mean, is oddballs they are. They look like something out of a late 80s Nintendo game. But I find them more believable than her design. She just doesn't look like she fits. And there's a lot of, and here we are with Plundor making his I guess you're going to, his epic first appearance, you know, in this episode. And what kills me is I've grown, I mean, obviously the Four Horsemen made the character look so good in figure form. And which just leaves that John Irwin, who did the voice for Plundor, you know, the muscles. I hate that voice.
That's what I mean. When I seen Plundor for the first time, too, first I thought, no, he didn't frighten me. I thought he was silly looking. But when I heard that voice, it reminds me of another silly voice. And I don't know if that's from some other type of cartoon, but it was not threatening. It was just, God, was there some other type of, again, I hate to always say Looney Tunes, but there's something so familiar about that voice that I hated.
Well, it definitely it sounds like a very generic, you know, cartoon character. This kind of, I mean, it does sound something that Mel Blanc probably did in one of the. And I'm a Looney Tunes fanatic myself, but I can't place who it might have sounded like. But it certainly sounds like a generic cartoon character. Whether it's a hero or villain is kind of, you know, doesn't really matter because the voice tone sounds so familiar, and I feel like, you know what, I feel like, you know, I'm not against the idea of a villainous rabbit. It's how he's presented, and mm-hmm. You know, obviously, you know, and you know, with what he does in the story, makes for a good villain, a guy who's, you know, destroying stuff. It kind of sounds like almost like a Captain Plant story, because this was in the early days of promoting, you know, taking care of the earth, avoid pollution, that kind of thing, and you know, taking care of, you know, the animals and the surroundings around you, way before the early 90s, where they were, you know, everybody was shoving it down kids' throats in various cartoons and media.
I was gonna say, I like how that Sword of Power was drawn there on that stump when Cringer was up close. It was like really detailed close up. I don't know. Of course, Brett Rayman called it a back scratcher. It's like, you know, he's supposed to be so stupid he doesn't even realize
it. Paul's pushing the limits of Rayman's idiocy, which I'm like, I have a hard time believing that Rayman's that stupid, but
yeah, and you know,
but I love Rayman to death, so I'm not gonna come down on that too hard.
But and of course, as you see, Gleedle's gonna explain to He-Man what happened to this
planet. And this is, you know, You know, it's not a, it's a good way of building up a villainous rabbit, you know, because the music that we've heard in so many episodes helps paint this picture of the devastation to this planet, that these little animals are don't have clean water, they don't have a proper, you know, environment to live in, because this prick is draining the life force from the planet to turn it into a liquid and sell it to probably other people who could, you know, profit from, you know, hey, I can give another planet a better life force if I sell them this liquid here.
Yeah, because he says it's like magical now. But yeah, it's draining the life of that planet. It's turning the water black. It's killing off all the vegetation and life. And it's spoiling it. That's why he's known as Plundor the Spoiler. So yeah, it's like, as you've seen, he's absolutely wrecked their planet. And I found it kind of amusing the whole time. See, when He-Man's looking at her cat, he never thought of, hey, that cat reminds me of somebody. But then he looks at one on a wall, that painting that reminds him of something, which obviously, you know, is Battle Cat, Cringer, whatever. But I always thought, well, why didn't the Gleedle's cat remind? I don't know. I used to think that
Gleedle's cat doesn't have that kind of fluffy.
The side jowls.
The side jowls, and I mean the purple cat in the painting looked a little bit more like Cringer than this one does. I think Tiger Wolf, I think, is the actual name of this particular cat that Gleedle owns.
Yeah. But, oh, and it's the part coming up when Cringer is doing his growl, snarl to try to talk with this other animal, and then when that animal just does one row or something, he knows everything he said. Like he has, like, I don't know, seven lines or something that apparently came
Cringer's
from
one hell of an interpreter.
He is. I mean, he sucks at trying to talk to them, but all he has to do is hear one thing, and apparently, bam, he knows the entire language. And what was the scene when all those clocks and things, as you see, that wake up He-Man and Gleedle? Is this supposed to be something like in a reference of Alice in Wonderland with?
That's what I always kind of thought, you know, with him kind of being the March Hare, kind of reference to the clocks and stuff like that. I mean, I instantly think something. You know, acknowledging the story of Alice in Wonderland here, and really, you know, I mean, it's not a really bad episode. It's really not. I mean, it is when you're expecting, you know, certain characters and things and storylines from the He-Man cartoon. I could see this as being a big disappointment to kids. I mean, it was to me when I first saw it, and for years I just hated this episode because I'm like, why is it so celebrated? And really, I mean, the story is fine. Paul Dini does a good job. It's just, you know, voice acting is a big thing with me in cartoons. If you got a bad voice actor, I mean, it kills the character instantaneously. I don't care how cool the design is. Look at MYP for that one. But, I mean, Clawful, particularly on that one. But a villainous rabbit that's, you know, greedy and likes to destroy, you know, the atmosphere and just all is all about being one big conglomerate, so to speak, you know, it's
No, what I liked is, you know, of course,
I mean, he is essentially a type of Lord of Destruction. I mean, he has destroyed an entire planet, you know, much like Skeletor, you know, has ambitions to do. So you could almost say that, you know, Plundor has had great success in destroying an entire planet.
Oh, yes, that's what I mean. I mean, succeeded, I mean, at doing what he wanted. Now, like I said, he's going to try to, you know, make millions and billions, and he's almost convinced He-Man, or was trying to convince He-Man to join him, but He-Man even knows that what he's doing is wrong. He might not know this planet, but he knows what he's doing to that planet's wrong. But I love seeing, like you said, all his friends come together that come to the aid and help He-Man. I mean, they're coming to a planet they know nothing about, and are going through these perils, too. And, you know, of course, Orko is going to try to help He-Man remember, which in a couple minutes he will, but you see Ram-Man, you know, taking action and taking care of those big robotic rabbits that are flying and hovering, smashing. Yeah, rabbots. I mean, he's smashing them. He's banging into them. I mean, you know, he's having his time to shine. Like I said, earlier you had Zodak. Earlier you had Skeletor succeed in his plan. I mean, sure, He-Man's going to make it back, but Skeletor even succeeded. That's what I said. It's just the only thing that really spoiled, no pun intended, was Plundor's look. I wish that maybe if they could have had a different looking villain and seemed more imposing, I bet you this episode would have been even higher ranked among fans. Because Plundor, while he does look silly in design, like you said, he succeeds in what you know he was doing earlier, and everything else that's happened has been interesting. And plus the thought of, you know, like I said, we thought, my God, He-Man was gone. He-Man won't remember who he is. What's going to happen? And you always are waiting for that moment to when, is He-Man going to know what's going on again? And of course, when Orko gives him the sword, just said, you know, say, by the power of Grayskull, and bam, he holds it up. And he says, by the power of Grayskull, and his memory comes back. You know, as a kid, you're freaking out. I know, he's back. He-Man's back. You know, that's the moments in these shows that's always are cool, you know, that you can remember when you were a kid.
We got here the infamous transformation. I certainly didn't feel that way because I didn't see this as a kid.
Oh, you didn't? Well, for me...
I'd have liked this episode as a kid had I seen it as a little kid. There were certain episodes I just did not like, and this would have been one of them. I can tell you that right now.
Well, so for me, I just, like I said, I ate it up. I mean, I was just into it all the way from
I like this action sequence of He-Man, you know, roundhouse kicking the robots.
Yeah. He does a punch.
Great animation you can see a whole lot of.
And that's the thing I liked, because you said you've seen a punch, you've seen a spinning kick, you've seen a grab and a smash. Like you said, unique, interesting animation for that. And that's what was, that was another thing that's cool. And of course, you've seen Plundor saying, well, if I can't, you know, sell this, and nobody's going to have this magical liquid, and he's going to stick it in his rocket ship, and he's just going to blast it out into outer space and just get rid of it. And
you know, as we're talking about him right now, I'm putting another link. He's almost in a way like Hordak. You know, because you look at the Fright Zone. The Fright Zone has destroyed the environment around it. It's just, it's dirty, it's oily, it's just like its technology has destroyed that whole part of Etheria. It's very similar to how Trainus, I think is the name of this planet.
Yeah,
what Plunder's done to this planet, and it just, I'm starting to think, like, well, he's about destroying this planet, spoiling it, like Skeletor is the great, you know, it has always, you know, envisioned to do. Yep. And then, like, with Hordak, he's, you know, he just seems that he's about, you know, technology.
But as you see, He-Man brought it all back with the life. You see that part where how He-Man looks at the screen, like, after, you know, everything's brought back, but He-Man has that way he was looking dead on at the screen.
Yeah.
Certain angles, you know. I can't explain to you. It's going to sound silly. I hate that view of He-Man more than any view almost in, like, the series, because they do it a lot where that particular look, he looks always looked different to me, and I didn't like his look compared to when he's at a certain side or this or that. It's just the way he was drawn, I know this is weird, but it brings another memory. I couldn't stand that look of him looking at the screen like that. He looks so weird. I don't know. I'm going to have to get screenshots to show just to try and explain. Couldn't stand it.
Oh, I'd get upset if the power sword was drawn a bit awkward, you know, as a kid. Like, it was either, if it would slant up and then curve at the top there. Small bits of animation would get on my nerves, too, as a kid. I'm like, it's not supposed to look that way. They drew it wrong.
Yeah.
I'd get upset over that kind of small stuff, but.
Well, as you see there, I mean, they're going to have Plundor destroying his own thing there at the end. He's going to be the one that works and smashes and finishes it all off. And then, the moral. That's what's interesting about the moral. Again, we'd love to see, you know, when we've seen Zodak return, at least he's saying a moral. And he has this really calm voice. It's like a teacher, a parent. There was something about when Zodak spoke, you really want to sit and listen. And that's what's funny about this episode, or interesting about the episode.
Yeah, Lushama did a good job. I mean, he's done so many characters. I mean, from King Randor to Stratos to Cobra Khan to Triclops and Trapjaw. And I mean, he's done a variety of really good voices, and even though you can tell it's the same guy, his dialect and tone,
something calm, so calming about it.
Very, calm, which is kind of what you'd expect from someone who is an observer and out of space. He's not someone who's an aggressor or someone who runs in fear. He's observing. He stays calm because he's not going to do anything other than just sit and watch, essentially. So.
Yeah, and here I was going to bring up one interesting thing about this episode, too. The reason it kind of stuck a little more with me was this is one that maybe after it was shown a couple times, it must have been making its rounds because obviously the message. This was shown in our school during like our recess time, if you will, you know, in our classroom. And it was talking about at the time when there was a whole thing, there was it was about saving the environment, pollution, you know, cleaning up. You know, we'd go outside, you know, at school, some of the days when there was these like days of saving the environment, and we'd pick up garbage around the school. We'd actually have like these certain special days, and we'd all get like special snacks and stuff in the cafeteria. Well, this episode was shown around that whole time, and it was talking about the pollution of the world and our planet. When Zodak, I always remember when he made that speech at the end about, you know, this isn't only happening on Eternity, it's happening right, you know, on Earth. I remember it freaked me out because it scared me. Because in the episode, as you've seen all the horrible stuff that did happen in Trainus, the thought of, I remember as a kid thinking, is this going to happen to Earth? I really was frightened that the water was going to become black. It's weird that, you know, when you're a kid, you have certain, you know, ways things that, you know, are give you a certain impression. And so I just remember this being shown in school, and it kind of freaked me out with the quote at the end. And I remember asking my teacher about it. They said, no, the water's not going to turn black, but they're just trying to give a point about the environment here on Earth. And that's why it was so important and so special that some schools showed it. And it was shown in my school, and that was just a memory I had of that. That's why I think that episode sticks with me.
See, look at that. You believe the water's going to turn black. Now that teacher probably's like, damn this cartoon, I'm going to write an angry letter to Filmation. They're telling the kids that the water's going to turn black and all these other crazy colors here.
But you know, they loved the message.
The air.
No, but the thing was about the...
You were probably one of the reasons why they toned down season two.
Exactly. Damn, the water's
going to turn black. Joe's going to his teachers believing all this stuff here and like, we can't have this. Our kids, you know, well, someone please think of the children, Miss Lovejoy.
Save the children. Yeah, but it did. It scared me because I thought that the pollution was going to get that bad. But I think that's why they made it an emphasis in school. At least shown the episode, and we had around the whole time of the whole saving the environment and pollution stuff, which, like you said, look at Captain Planet. The whole damn show was about that.
Well, but the whole early 90s, because I was in elementary school at the time, and it's just like, I don't know what it was, but it just – it was emphasized so much by what seemed like a bunch of dorks at the time. Like, they just made it feel like trying to save the planet and save the Earth I didn't want to listen to the people that were telling me this. Like, it was just people that I'm like, I don't like you. I don't like your message. And stop bothering me with this. I almost felt like had I seen He-Man doing this, you know, had I seen this episode, I would have probably had a much more better approach because I barely watched Captain Planet. Like, I watched it some. I had a couple of the toys, you know. But it was – I didn't watch it to learn lessons about saving the environment. I watched it to be entertained because I thought the villains looked cool. And I want to see Captain Planet run around and destroy the villain of the week or the episode and stuff like that. So, we're taking this in a far different direction.
No, but like, it's an interesting way to say
we are in the month of April here, and Earth Day will be coming up at some point.
Yeah. So like I said, I mean, I enjoyed the whole episode as a kid. I mean, it was fun with the action, with the different amounts of characters, the situations they were in. It just, I really believe that if Plunderer could have looked different and sounded more imposing, I wonder how much more of an impression it could have had on people and if they would have enjoyed it more. Because he doesn't make you want to take this series. Looking at him, looking at the little Schminovitz and silliness of some things, it doesn't want to make you take it seriously. But the message of
it's not an episode that you would recommend to somebody who wants to revisit Filmation.
Yeah, they think, this oh, be God, yeah.
You're like, yeah, you stay away from this episode. You know, if you come across this episode, is one of your first three episodes to watch, you're going to wonder, like, is this what a lot of the series is like?
Yeah.
And really, it just goes to, you know, the design of Plunder. You still could have a successful-looking villainous rabbit, but you have to change his design a bit. Obviously, the Four Horsemen made it work.
Sure.
But
so it's my hypothetical. The voice has got... To you, for me to you, it's just my hypothetical. I know you might say no. I mean, maybe you say yes, but do you think if there would have been a different design, a different villain, or if the rabbit would have looked more frightening and not sounded silly, do you think people could have thought differently or no? Probably just they would have had their same impression maybe. I just don't know. I always like hype.
Like I said, I think the characters overall, like I didn't mind like, you know, his outfit and all that stuff. It was the face looked a little too, you know, light and fluffy, even with his scowling eyes. I'm like, you know, and the voice. The voice is what really kills.
Yeah,
I mean, had we gotten a much more a frightening, you know, looking villain, which Filmation did some very good, you know, some designs sucked and others were absolutely fantastic. And I feel like if they still went with that same voice, it wouldn't have mattered. It would have destroyed any credibility the character had as like being a memorable villain because of being a good villain. Or, you know, now he's just looked at as people don't like the character, so people think it's funny and cute. Just, oh man, how about Blondor? Or it's like the same thing with Crackers the Clown. I'm like, it's not, I am like, I don't laugh at that kind of stuff. Like, it pisses me off because I feel like, Do you think it's a good idea to push for a Crackers the Clown figure, much like with Plunder? I'm like, why would you do that? Everybody hates the character, but people think it's funny to reference and stuff like that. I'm like, you start doing that, they're gonna start listening. Hey, there's a big demand for this figure. We got to get it out there. That kind
of, yeah,
that's Crackers. Yeah. And it probably would be better if I converse with people, through, you know, verbally, face to face, or something like this, and they said, no, I hated the episode. But it's like when you see people praising it on you know, the old forum, stuff like that, saying they wanted to be part of the top 10, stuff like that, you wonder, who are these people? I mean, you can't, I could not understand. And so I've gotten older, clearly it's not as bad as I thought it was when I first saw it. It's certainly not a top 20 episode, I'll tell you that right now.
I enjoyed it. Like I said, I enjoyed the episode. Yeah, I don't enjoy it. You
know, it's probably Paul Dini's, you know, least impressive episode, because he's all the other episodes he's done are impressive as hell. But this would probably be the black mark on his resume of He-Man episodes. And really, it's not horrible. It's not Star Child. It's not, you know, Greatest Show in Eternia. It's not, I was trying to think of another, like Day of the Machines. I don't like that episode. Energy Beast. You know, there's
I really wouldn't myself, though. I mean, I wouldn't put it as a black mark. I mean, I really do enjoy it. I mean, it's just, I think Plunder.
Well, I guess in the sense that it's, if you know, because not even Larry DeTaylor had some stinkers of the series, like Sandy Beneath the Sea. I mean, it's a terrible episode. And Larry DeTaylor wrote that. And Larry's done nothing but add to the mythology, much like Paul Dini has. Same thing with Robbie London. Robbie London wrote tons of great episodes and a couple stinkers as well, but. You know, all these writers can't make them all successful. But I guess to say that it's the bottom of the list would be Quest for He-Man, for Paul Dini's resume on He-Man. Because, when you look at what he's done, when you got Teela's Quest, Mystery Manny Faces, To Save Skeletor.
Oh, well, yeah, when you're doing comparisons like that. I mean, no.
In comparison, like, this is the bottom of the list. And it's not slight Paul Dini. It's like, you look at what else he's done. You can't compare this episode to, you know, Teela's Quest and Evelyn's plot. You just can't.
No, you can't. I mean, like I said, this still is a good episode, just a bad character that stars as the villain. And when you're talking about Crackers the Clown earlier, I mean, that's just absolute silliness. I mean, if they made a figure.
It's not funny, people, so no. Stop making jokes that you want a toy of it. You know,
I couldn't even picture. I mean, that would have to be just. What's sick is I could almost picture people saying, man, this would be funny to get. I don't know. It's just
it, no, it would stupid. Not be funny to get. It's like, so you want to spend $35 with Fort and, you know, an extra $5 for shipping to get a clown from a He-Man cartoon that's universally hated as one of the worst episodes?
Is it funny? And there's no reuse of that buck if they're to make it. You cannot reuse Crackers. And that would be a waste if you really, especially if you want a really interesting character that you've been fighting for and clamoring for, and they would give you that in place of the slot. Yeah, that's like kicking.
I mean, it's like if Super, which I don't think Super 7, you know, would ever go in that direction too. But I feel like, you know, if we were to get Crackers the Clown before Dragoon.
Oh, you know, that's right. I just feel
like, you know, that, you know, be torches and pitchforks, you know, coming up to the offices of Super 7. Like, what the hell are you doing here?
Like you said, if you want interesting, you know, bucks being used for things, yes. I mean, give us, you know, Spydra, give us Azrog, you know, in a two-pack.
Joe's trying to win me over right now. He's doing a really good job.
Well, no, I'm saying it because you always do mention them, but those are different bucks, but... they're interesting characters. They're both wicked-looking villains. When you talk about Dragoon, he's a buck that can be reused. You know, they're not going to make him super, super big. He'll probably be the size of He-Man, but that's still a unique character. So like you said, when you think of...
I like to think he would be the size of Lord Dactus.
Yeah, they could... extra height.
Dragoon is a big guy, but he's not, you know, he's not the size of, you know, a big giant. He's just a... he's a big dragon man, and I like to think, you know, because Lord Dactus on the shelf stands up a lot higher than the rest of the gang. So
I just
I'd say, you know, same wings for Drago Man, same scale as Lord Dactus, and you've got Dragoon.
See, and that's what I mean. I just think of all the characters that, you know, we haven't got, we should get, I mean, unique ones. Again, when you could even say somebody like Dark Dream that's different, that could be a freaky character.
That's another one we need to
get. Dark Dream. And then, like, heroes. There's still other heroes to get. When you think of the House of Shikoti, you got House of Shikoti, and of course you got Shikoti, and you got Mask, but then you don't have any of the heroes. And I always thought a cool little two-pack. Stanley. I was going to say Stanley and Malaktha, I thought would always be a cool little two-pack if you could have something like that. A two-pack of, you know, the guy who's the archaeologist and, you know, his little helper sidekick. And then you still have other heroes that we could get that were from not only Princess of Power, but of course you could get more of them from New Adventures. But that's, I mean, there's so many other characters that haven't been made. I mean, we still need King Miro from Filmation to complete the royal family, even though,
I've never, ever, ever desired a King Miro figure.
That's another one
I'm like, I don't get it. I don't get what people...
For the family. You gotta have the royal family. And
I'm not into He-Man for the royal family here.
You're
people.
A hater.
I'm in it for the big kick-ass heroes and villains here. I don't want a grandpa on my shelf right now. But you know what? I digress, because I want Azrog and Spydra. I don't hear people talk about either one of those. And if it means to get Azrog and Spydra means supporting King Miro, then I would do it quietly and hold my hand up high saying, yes, give me a King Miro if it means getting me an Azrog and Spydra.
And he did show up in quite a few episodes, including didn't he even show up in Pop? Prince of the Power?
They showed up in She-Ra as well, yeah.
That's what I mean. No, it just, I always felt like it was interesting when you found out that, you know, King Randor's dad is there. I remember that kind of, that got me. I was like, wow, he's got a dad? You seen that he was an old scrapper. He'd still go to town sometime. I thought he did something where he tried to get involved. So I just thought it'd be cool to have him too. So there's plenty. There's plenty to get through or get to before, God forbid, if they ever do Crackers. I can't picture that. If they did Crackers.
No, I'd like to think the line would end, because nobody is clamoring for a Crackers the Clown. They're not clamoring for a Star Child. They're not clamoring for, I don't know.
Well, what they're clamoring for is something that I had a petition signed, over 500 signatures. On He-Man World, over 1,000 people signed this. So for people to say that there's no interest in something that deserves to have figures, it's time they get their time to shine. And we're going
to
talk about...
Yeah, they've been listening to the two or three people that have been bitching against it for the longest time. Oh, clearly, there's just not a demand for this particular faction of characters here, because I saw three people complaining about it. So we won't be doing this.
Yeah, and there's a demand. That, like I said, the petition was sent off. I mean, that was probably over a year ago. So there's still plenty, and that's not including other forums and He-Man communities where more people want it too. But we're talking about the Meteorbs. And right now, for people who think that Meteorbs don't have any kind of, like, I guess, not just a following, but any origin, beyond, like I said, being an episode of Princess Power where you had the two dinosaurs or a couple of them and Comet Cat and Salt on the Hive, they had their own comic. It was issue 2 from the Star Marvel, and it was all dedicated to the Meteorbs, their arrival, and how you see that they came with, well, basically it was when Stondar and Rakan were coming towards Eternia, and also come the Meteorbs. And they're, you know, of course, the two factions, you got them, you know, they're separated, but like Stondar is the leader. Again, we're not going to read the whole comic, we don't want to spoil it all, but just giving some little factoids from it. But Stondar is he's the leader of the Meteorb Legion, they call it. He's the leader of them. So he's the one who rules over, I mean, well, I guess, you know, commands the others. He commands Rakan, he commands then all the five heroic Meteorbs. And you find out some of their powers. You see how they shoot blasts out of their, you know, mouth, how some of them are, I don't know if it's all of them. I always took all of them as having the indestructible armor. Because I think at least Rhinorb, maybe in one particular panel when He-Man's striking on Rhinorb, he's like, you ain't gonna do anything, my body's indestructible. And then I think it was Orbear, I'm trying to remember which was which, but another had like electricity that he has like just tons of megavolts of electricity that his energy, his body can like shoot out. So these are some imposing things. But what annoys me is when people would say the Meteorbs don't belong. Okay, I know I've heard the story a million times. Yes, we know that the molds were borrowed from Bandai, from the Tamagoras, to make the Meteorbs. Everybody says, yes, they're capitalizing on Transformers. But like I said, they're out at the same time as the Comet Warrior, Stondar, and Rakan. They're different looking, but their premise is similar. They are either meteors or comets that transform into warriors. And yes, Stoner and Rakan, when they transform, look closer, I guess, in scale of a normal He-Man body, and the Meteorbs don't. But when you're a kid, I always say it, what did we have back then? We had something called imagination. Even if we didn't have issue two of this comic, which most did, but even if we didn't, when you seen that stuff at the store, you just bought them. You loved it because it said Masters of the Universe, and you used your imagination. I never questioned, Tyler, not one time when I went to the store and I seen all 10 of those suckers together. Did I look when I was a kid and say, says Masters of the Universe, but you know what? I'm not buying it. That didn't happen. You went bananas. You seen it. You went
bananas. That's the kind of the opinion you have for most people bitching about Meteors. They all act as if like they're seeing them for the first time in the toy store. Like, you know, they've got their monocle and their top hat and their cane. And, you know, I beg to differ. That is not part of the Masters of the Universe legend. You know, I'm going to go over here and buy GoBots. You know, or something. I'm not knocking GoBots when I say it's just a random toy.
No, I know. Yeah. I know what you're saying.
But I've never been really one to participate in a lot of in-depth discussions about people arguing about Masters of the Universe. And, I mean, I would even on forums and stuff like that, I just would sit and observe, and I just would shake my head, you know, and especially about the Meteors. I cannot figure out why people are just so against it. I don't care what it is. If that logo is slapped on there and during the 80s line, it is just as much a part of the Masters of the Universe mythology and toy line as Man-at-Arms and Panther War is. And I challenge anybody, you know, just because you don't like them, I'm like, that means that they're not part of it? What the hell does that mean?
Yeah, it's
I like the idea of linking them to the Rock Wars because it makes sense.
Yeah, even their card back. Remember on the back of the Meteorbs card back, it even says the Meteorbs, which came with the Comet Warriors Stoned on Rakan in a meteor shower. They even say that in a quick little brief snippet on the card back for the Meteorbs. So it's always known that they came with Stoned on Rakan in a meteor shower. You know, that's why I don't get it. It's just, it's unfortunate because I hear so many people, like you said, I respect when somebody wants anything made into a figure from the cartoon, mini comics or whatever. I want to see their demand of what they're hoping. I hope that comes to a reality. But then you hear sometimes, like, you know, they'll say something like, well, the Meteorbs were never featured in a comic. They were never in a cartoon. They have no medium. Like, you know, why would you want them? I'm like, but you're talking about a character that you've seen in one panel in the background or something, and that was it. You want that, but that's okay? Like I said, okay.
Yeah, there's the exact same people that said, oh, they weren't featured in the cartoon, they had books, then clearly they don't know, you know, squat about Masters of the Universe then. You
right,
know,
you've
got all this information on the internet. You got tons of things to buy. All the cartoons are available on multiple versions of DVD. For people to sit there and say such things as they were never in the cartoon, or oh, they were never in a comic book. Oh, they, you know, it's just like, okay, first off, you're showing you how naive and stupid you are, you know. And second, what? Yeah, you just, another one, people. Some people are so passionate about a small character and a panel of one particular mini comic, and they're ready to flip the table over and set fire to the first living creature that's outside their door. Because this character in the back panel of one of the later mini comics has not been made into a figure yet.
You know why I'm going to bring that up? I'm going to bring up what you're saying right there. Is when they, at first it sounded like such a silly joke, but then they kept talking about it so much that they made him have a return. And that was a character who was in the background of one of the mini comics pulling on a rope. And they called,
yes,
they nicknamed him Tug. Yeah, they nicknamed him Tug O' War. And I was like, are you guys
who,
serious?
Who is it who nicknamed him? And why, you know, because I used to wonder about
I
that.
Don't know, but that's what kills me. It's like, okay, I was like, wait a second. You guys are harping on me for wanting things that not only were made into figures back then in the 80s, not only did they have a comic book, not only were they in an episode, or some of them, in an episode of Princess of Power, and not only did they have that beautiful poster done by Earl Norum, they had all this stuff, but you guys say there's one little panel where they're showing a guy a tug of war, and that's okay. But my thing, which has all this stuff, it doesn't have a place in Masters? I was like, I don't understand. And do you think if the Horsemen make the Meteorbs, they're going to make them as small and round and, I guess, egg-like, if you will, like they were in the 80s? No, they'll probably sure give maybe that bulbous egg design, but I could picture them being the size of Cringer, because in this comic, that's how you see all the animal-like ones. They look like they're around a Cringer size. And picture them with more details. The Horsemen can make them awesome. They've made people love things that you think they'd hate. Like you brought up Plundor. People have loved Plundor. People who hated Snout Spout, they love Snout Spout, Rio Blast, Ninjor. These were all ones that some people said, oh, they don't belong in He-Man. I didn't like them, but now you love them.
I get so fed up with people who sit there and say certain characters do not belong in He-Man. I mean, I'm so sick of that conversation. I just cannot why. What is like everyone's like, no, the toy line stopped after the first two waves, and Filmation, it doesn't hold up anymore. It's all about this, and it's all about that. I'm like, you know, do Star Wars fans say this about Star Wars? Like, oh, after New Hope, the other movies, then it's just about New Hope, you know. Or people watch, you know, Transformers, you know. It's like, oh, no, it's just about season one, you know, or whatever the case may be. Because, you know, I name these two properties in particular because these are two rabid fan bases. Yep. They love everything they can get their hands on. Star Wars especially. You know, I mean, for God's sakes, just doing a segment on background characters that had been made into Star Wars action figures.
Yeah, you're right.
Those guys, I mean, you know, the guy that gets choked by Darth Vader in New Hope in the council team. And the figure's made by holding onto his throat. That figure does not deserve to be made, but they did do it.
I feel like, okay,
if with that kind of mentality, there's no way in hell that the Meteor, all of them, should not be made, along with various Filmation characters from He-Man and She-Ra, that the Galactic Guardians, all the mutants from New Adventures should not be made, all the one-shot characters from NYP should all be made. I mean, it's just like there should be no logic, no legitimate logic why people should not get the characters they want. And for someone to sit there and say that characters that were part of the vintage line from the Meteors to 1987 of, you know, Ninjor, because he's a ninja. Oh, it doesn't belong because I say so. And
yeah,
I feel like
it could, like I said, I think Super 7 might make it happen. Now, the thing that used to freak people out, they always asked me, they said, Joe, if they did make them, what size do you envision them as? And I always bring up this comic. I mean, as you see, because Dirt popped it up right there. I always envision the comic size because inside when you open up, again, like I said, they're the size of like Cringer. Because some people would always bring up, because I told you Assault in the Hive is when you had, you know, Comet Cat in it and you had some of the dinosaurs. They were really big in that because, like I said, you've seen that He-Man is flying in outer space on Comet Cat. He's riding him like he's, you know, a super giant battle cat. He's way too big. And I was like, no. I don't want those because there's no way people are going to buy 10 super big giant battle cat size Meteors. Of course, two of them, you know, Gorilla and Kamenroid, those ones would be, I think, just regular people size. But the other eight, they're not going to buy animals. So they could work. But to get into this comic, basically, now, as like I said, it was a side rant, but the Meteors deserve it. You see Orko starting off, he's in Man-at-Arms' lab. And he's, of course, not really listening, screwing around, and he bumps and hits the laser bolt. And when he hits the laser bolt, it shoots, well, a laser out through the window, and that's what knocks, I think, Rock on and separates the meteor shower and him from where he is, and he lands somewhere else. One interesting thing I like, I don't know if you noticed, and I don't know how many times this has been done, but Man-at-Arms, I like how the artist drew him because he drew him like the toy, but also gave the mustache from Filmation. I know this sounds silly to say, Joe, that sounds a little goofy, who cares? But if you look back at that comic, there's a particular way they drew, like, you know, that one piece of particular armor on the toy for Man-at-Arms in his one shin that was guarded. It's drawn like that. And even from the back, you know how the straps for the figures back then had that little snap?
One chin for a second, as if, like, Man-at-Arms had many chins.
No. So, like I said, even the... Yeah, so the strap on his back is exactly like the toy, but then they gave him a mustache. I don't know how many times I've seen somebody draw the toy, but with the mustache. Did you see that or even pay attention, or is that just a goofy pickup I noticed?
I mean, I've never, when Man-at-Arms is there, I just, like, it's Man-at-Arms. I didn't notice that.
Okay, for me, it's just, I don't know why, it just stuck with me. But
so the design you're talking about, Orko's design sticks out to me more than Man-at-Arms did.
Yeah.
Orko's looked very slender looking. like yeah, he's still pint-sized, you know, court magician, but he's very slender looking in the Star comics a lot of times, and then just kind of has this kind of, I don't know how to, I mean, if you have had the book or you haven't seen, you have to look at it to know what I'm talking about, but go ahead, Joe.
Well, no, that's fine. You're right. He does have a different design. And I don't know if the same artist who worked on this or the one who penciled it did a lot of the others. I don't know if it was Ron Wilson. I think that's who did the penciling for this, but he just had a unique interpretation of things. But of course, they have to go find out, see what Crash landed. As they're going to see what Crash landed, you see that Skeletor knows what's going on too. And he wants to find out about this meteor that's landed. And because he knows there may be some kind of energy that can help him defeat not only He-Man, but Hordak, because he hates them both. And they're both always after Skeletor. So he wants to go to this landing spot. But when they go to the landing spot, you see that not only when they all get there, I think that's when Stonedar appears with the Meteorb Legion, and then eventually the evil Meteorb show up. What's funny is Comet Droid wasn't in the panel when they all showed up, and it kind of surprised me because I remember I used to count them all. I was like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I was sitting there like, hey, where's Comet Droid? And I think that even later in the issue, when he's flying, you know, when they're all flying like towards the Palace of Eternia, he gets knocked out of the air. It's like, oh, now he shows up when he gets knocked out of the air. But I was like, the poor guy isn't getting any credit. But you do. You get to see the highlights of, like I said, all their powers. You see that Rakan is kind of like a careless person who's maybe not listening all the time too. It's like giving like a little relevance to Oracle.
He tends to like in the rock people to the rescue mini comic. He's depicted as kind of a eager to action kind of character. Like he's young. He's, you know, a good warrior, but he's, you know, brash. He's I think it's the
hot headed too. Maybe.
Well, maybe not necessarily hot-headed in the sense that he just sounds very eager to go into battle. Like he's it's part of the fun. He's a buccaneer. He's, you know, I can't wait to get at Skeletor. As kind of a similar quote that he says in that. Whereas Stonedar comes off as a very level-headed, wise, experienced leader.
Yeah, he's the leader.
So they're clearly the opposites, but you know, you feel like, you know, they're both very competent characters. And of course, Rakan's the one that gets injured for this entire book, essentially, and Stonedar's the one that kind of comes in and explains to He-Man who they are,
right?
You know, and you know, obviously Skeletor gets wind of this, and I believe his Terrorclaws show up as big gloves, don't they? Just gloves.
You know what's funny is I didn't remember if they were they in this one, because I thought in the
I know in the first issue where the Horde show up, I know the Terrorclaws show up and they're depicted so poorly. I was thinking in this one that they were depicted as well, but maybe I'm wrong on that one.
Yeah,
because I don't have the book in front of me. I'm just going by memory on this one.
Well, I think that he used the gloves, like you said, in the one issue. I don't know if that was part one, but when he was using them and they looked like gloves and he was breaking up under Castle Grayskull to get a piece of Castle Grayskull, to get a piece of the rock to use it as something. But you're right, his tear claws look like gloves, but I don't think he used the gloves in this one. His whole plan was to get now the evil Meteorbs to, like, join him. His whole little plot was he was going to try to turn the heroes and the heroic Meteorbs, like, against each other. Because as they were flying towards the Palace of Eternia, they're getting shot at. And they're thinking that, you know, it's people inside. And it's not Man-at-Arms that are doing it. Skeletor's plan was to get the Meteorbs, the evil ones. They're hovering over the Palace of Eternia, and he's got an invisible force field around them, so they can't be seen, but they're blasting. So the good guys think they're being shot at by, you know, this palace that's supposed to help them. And He-Man's got to come in and stop this from happening. You know, he's being left behind because the Meteorbs are so fast racing to the Palace of Eternia. So by the time He-Man gets there and he jumps in the middle, you see how fast he is. You see his hands going like in a blur. He's, you
know, oh, yeah.
I always love that scene.
Talking about, yeah.
Like the Man-at-Arms is blasting, the Meteorbs blasting, letting them know, and bam, you finally get to see, you know, what's really going on. It's Skeletor and the evil Meteorbs that were doing it. So now they know what's going on. And it stops them from, you know, eventually fighting. They, like, take off. What I always like is, I told you, the Star comics had this thing I always got a kick out of where they loved, I told you, having everybody fly like Superman, having Scareglow fly and Mosquito fly. And it's, well, even Skeletor does it. you know, not only Scareglow and Meat and Mosquito like other ones, but Skeletor goes flying away at the end with the evil meteors. Like, he's Superman. I was like, what is it with these Star Marvels always having all these people flying away? But so, I mean, how many times can you think of Skeletor flying? I don't know. Is there many? Especially like that? Like, you know.
No, and really, the Star Comics, they break all the rules of what you kind of come to expect about He-Man and Master of the Universe unintentionally. It's almost as if like they're thinking, well, these are comic books. What do people do in comic books? They do crazy things. They fly, and then they do this and they do that. And, you know, people who've looked at these books and read them and owned them know that the continuity, there is not. From issue to issue, it's just, I mean, you've got, as we discussed in previous one, you got, you know, Squeeze, you know, working for the Horde, and you got Blast Attack working solely with Skeletor, and Scareglow can fly, and he's not really using fear as a weapon. He's just a ghost that looks like Skeletor, and he flies. And yeah, they there's all, very few of them kept with maintained the logic of what you're coming to expect from the story. Because, I mean, obviously, as we're talking right now, I mean, there's a lot of silly things going on in it.
Sure.
I mean, it's all... not, this one is not one of the most ridiculously silly Star comics. It's just not. No. There's,
it was a good story. A good
I think this one is obviously, I think, better than the first issue.
Yeah.
Which I, the first issue is just kind of all over the place. It's there to push the Horde. But I just didn't think it was very good. Whereas, of course, I got a little bit of nostalgia connected to this one because it's the first Star comic I ever owned.
Was it? Well, that's a good one to own for the first time. But yeah, there's
yeah,
I like it. Like you said, I mean, not only is there a great story where, you know, you see the origin of, you know, not only the meteors but Stone Darn and Rock On. There's a good plot, a side plot, and scheming from Skeletor, which, you know, was working. You've seen, hell, you even seen Orko using his magic where he was holding at bay two meteors that were blasting. Orko's using his magic. It's working. So, again, not only like how we were talking about the last episode where, you know, in Quest for He-Man, he was actually doing something that was accomplishing stuff, but in this one, his magic's working. So, I mean, of course, you know, yes, you have him screwing up in the lab, and then you hear about how Rock-On is kind of like, you know, messing up, not listening, which they were trying to give a little balance of the story of how him and Orko are doing the same thing, if you will. And, you know,
yeah,
learned a little. But, I mean, it was, through and through, it was a good issue. Like I said, you did get to see these new characters. You got to see all their powers. So these things aren't, if you read this, you see the meteors are not silly. That's what I love, too. They never came across as silly characters or designs. They seemed imposing and intimidating. Like, wow, he may have just full force slammed one of them with the sword and it did absolutely nothing. That's kind of freaky. You know, that's kind of interesting to see that he's indestructible. And, you know, it's, I just love seeing the strength of these meteors. And it's a shame we didn't get to see them return because I would have liked to see more of them. But from what we've seen, it was pretty good.
I still would love to see, you know, Skeletor in his council chamber, you know, talking to Crocobite, you know, and some of the other villainous, you know, meteors, and just, you know, setting, you know, talking with one or two of them, you know, and setting them up as a faction that works with Skeletor, you know, similar to the Snake Men, but more close with Skeletor in a sense that you don't feel like the meteors would betray Skeletor unless Skeletor plans to betray them. Yeah. That they would be a force that, you know, kind of do their own thing, but they also work closely with Skeletor, and their idea is not to betray Skeletor. I can see Skeletor obviously using them as a pawn, and then learn, you know, would use them in a way, and they come to find out this guy's going to sacrifice all every single one, so we turn on Skeletor, and then we go after He-Man and the heroic meteors. But
yeah,
that would be it would be. I mean, there's that panel in issue two where Skeletor's kind of leaning down, kind of whispering to Crocobite, you know, letting him know, you know, what he wants to do, and what, you know, and I just, that's one, that's a panel that's always stuck out to me for some reason. I have no idea why, but I always liked Crocobite as a kid when I saw all the meteors, and just, you know, as a crocodile. I like crocodiles and alligators. I'm like, hey, there's a, you know, this is a character that looks like a crocodile. I'm like, this is awesome. I just, that's the panel. I'm like, I could see Skeletor working closely with the evil meteors and,
sure,
you know, assigning him on missions with Cobra Khan and Web Store. You know, hey, you know, take Dinosaur, you know, with you and, you know, cause some destruction or something like that. All of these characters that we're talking, they all deserve respect. And also, given a good writer, a good artist, the Meteors could be given a great story that even the most, you know, the whiniest internet troll could sit there and like, okay, you know, that was pretty good. I still don't like the Venture stuff, though. That was pretty good. You know, just making sure he gets his 2 cents in the bitch about, you know, I don't like the old stuff. This is pretty good, though.
I'm sure, like I said, they could write it to where they could have more interesting stories. Because as you've seen in this one, it was only the evil Meteors and Skeletor. Those are the only evil characters you've seen. There were none of the other evil warriors that were in it. So it was just all their time to shine, and Skeletor was there to plot with them and try to get as much power as he could, and hopefully overtaking Hordak and He-Man. But, of course, you know, his plans failed. But, yeah, all in all, if anybody's never read issue 2 of this, you know, Star Marvel comic that you see up there, go ahead. You can find it on eBay. I mean, you can always find this on eBay. I can't say it enough. At a good price. And I know plenty of people that when they finally got it, they said, you know what, Joe, that was a really good issue. And I know a lot of people that are now collecting the Meteorbs, getting into them, like Paul Rudman. He started collecting the Meteorbs, and I think he said he finally got them all. Michael J. Vickery, he got all the Meteorbs. So there's people that are starting to get aboard. That's what I mean. It's like, that's what you got to do. You got to get out there to make them love them. And I can just picture that the time when they finally do debut from Super 7, which, crossing my fingers that it actually happens, watch the demand for the vintage ones even rise more. People are like, you know what? Damn it. These things are all right. I'm going to go back and find them. So that's all it takes. You got to get that spark to just get that interest for people who think maybe it ain't good or good. And they're pretty interesting.
Yeah, and I having a great story about the Meteors too. I mean, I think that would really, really help push it too. I mean, I like there's a great story that still can be told about the Meteors. If people are still not sold on them, there's still a great story that can be told about these two faction of characters. Because
absolutely,
like I said, they belong. They're not going anywhere. I don't care what people say. They're just as important as anybody else as part of, you know. For people who prefer NYP, to me, Meteors are just as important as Provis is to NYP fans. Like, people, NYP fans love Provis. He was in one episode, didn't do it, or Kallax, too. Kallax was, you know, didn't do anything. People thought it was such a great character. I understand that. People demanded a figure of him. The Meteorbs, two factions of Meteorbs, you know, they are just as important as Kallax and Provis. And, you know, various other minor characters that, you know, what the hell am I saying? The Meteors were part of the vintage line here, people. They were in the Shipper cartoon. They were in the Star Comics. They've had a bigger
presence
than these characters that people get fixated on that were in the background or had a couple lines and were quickly dismissed.
Sure.
Just feel like why are people finding this all the time? And I've seen it too, where people say, oh, they're just ripping off Transformers. Like, don't say that. I hate that. It's just like the weakest argument for people who sit there and say they don't like the Meteors. Oh, they're just ripping off Transformers. I'm like, and?
I mean, what's the relevance? Like you said, I mean, Stone Run and Rock On, they had a transforming feature too. But I mean, what's that mean? It's like, so what? Okay, I mean, they're a transforming thing. Yes, you could say, oh, they ripped off Transformers or GoBots. Heck, you might as well say GoBots. GoBots were out first.
Well, there you go. I mean, it's not to mention, you know, it's not like, I mean, we you know, America adapted the Transformers from the Takara line, you know, so it's not like, you know, it was as original as, you know. I don't know. I just feel like, look, they belong. They deserve toys. They deserve acknowledgement. You don't have to sit there and say they're as great as, you know, your Trap Jaws and your Evil Lands and stuff like that.
But they have their place.
They deserve to be acknowledged as part of the mythology, as part of the vintage toy line, definitely. And certainly deserve to have the classic treatment someday. I mean,
it's true. Like I said, they deserve their time to shine. They have a place in the canon. They've existed before. They should exist again. I'm sure when the Horsemen make them, they'll look fantastic. But, well, as you've seen, our Easter special, now you see why it was like, I guess, these two topics. Flundor being our rabbit, the Meteorbs always being associated with looking like eggs. So what the heck? But they both made for two very interesting, like I said, stories, topics. People can love the episode. They can love this issue. They can hate it. But either way, hopefully it reaches people it never reached before. Maybe it'll give them a different appreciation for either the episode or that comic, or the Meteorbs in general. So, but T-Rex, what you got? Any before we wrap it up, any final thoughts, any recommendations, any epic moments, updates? What you got?
Yeah, I'm gonna give a couple of quick shout outs real quick to Mr. Jeremiah Blue Jensen, who contacted me after last week's episode and praised the hell out of it. Loved it, enjoyed it, and had some good conversation with him. So I appreciate your kind words, Jeremiah. And Walt Hancock reached out to me and told me he enjoyed last week's show and gave me a fun question to answer and ask. So always appreciate Walt's feedback to the show.
Definitely.
And a relatively newcomer to the He-Man mythology is someone I know, Mr. David Taylor, who has taken my advice and checked out some recommended episodes of Filmation, has watched the He-Man movie probably for the first time in close to 30 years, and has been watching MYP episodes over the weekend as well. So,
awesome.
Taking my recommendation and getting excited and asking questions about the characters and the mythology and stuff like that too. So I appreciate David's hunger for this property that we praise the hell out of every single week. So gentlemen, I appreciate your all's devotion and desire to master the universe. I thank you all very much for that.
Well,
and,
fantastic.
My quick epic moment is from House of Chakotay Part 2 when you got the great I forgot the name of that piece of music is, but anyway, it's when Stanlin's being grabbed by the tentacles. And Cringer and Adam come up on the hill and see what's going on. And Cringer says, tells Adam, you know, in 2 seconds, I'm back in the royal palace. So you better lift your power. Just.
Yeah.
It's saying, He-Man, look, we got to do something. I'm scared, you know, scared out of my mind. If you don't transform into battle, I'm getting the hell out of here right now. Like, if that one rare moment where, and that's what makes that whole moment so much more intense, is because Cringer's saying, we got to do something about this. Turn me into Battle Cat or I'm getting out of here. Because you don't see that in the intensity of the moment, because this is the scariest episode of He-Man. And that's what makes this whole moment so much more exciting to me. I can watch that scene. I have watched that particular transformation sequence more than any other transformation sequence of the entire series because of, you know, what they're dealing with Chakotay. Stanley's being abducted, just evaporates into this fortress. By these tentacles, the music's playing, and then when the transformation kicks in, oh my gosh, I can't wait till we do a commentary for House of Chakotay Part 2.
That'll be fun. No, because you're right, because Cringer is usually running from being transformed and doesn't want to be transformed into Battle Cat. So for him to basically say, yeah, you better do this right now or I'm gone, that is pretty cool, because he's basically saying, yes, we need to do something, but if you don't, I'm out of here. But I like that, because you're right, he's always gone. Heck, how many times have we seen Cringer take off, and sometimes He-Man will do that bouncing off the wall and gets him as he's running away or something. So yeah, that's a good epic moment. I like
Yeah, that. It's just something we you know, it's we all either if Cringer tries to run away and Adam still gets him, or he'll go and hide in a bush or something like that, but this is the one time where he's saying, do it now, or I'm out.
Exactly.
You know, I just like love it. Because Cringer knows, I mean, we're in some serious shit here, people. Excuse my language.
Yeah.
You know, and it's because that's what this episode of House of Chakotay Part 2, if you, obviously, you know what we're talking about. If you have not, you need to, you know, look it up on YouTube, buy the DVDs, whatever you have to see this episode for to understand. I just feel like it's just a moment that, you know, that it makes that episode such a masterful episode. I mean, I not only do I want to do a commentary, I want to do a retrospect on House of Chakotay Part 2 at some point as well. You know, I can't say enough about that episode. I love it to death. So,
well,
but
it'll be coming
right there because I'm going too long.
Exactly, it'll be coming. It'll come eventually. But that was a good epic moment. So, well, as for me, I mean, pretty much like I always say, go to fansofpower.com, go to popculturenetwork.com. Go to HeManWorld.com, and on Facebook, go to Masters of the Universe He-Man is Your Ultimate Fan Group. All great places, all great people. So until next time, have a powerful day.
Hey, what are you, some sort of punker? I hate punkers, especially bald ones with green makeup. Wear masks over ugly faces. Like crickets that go when Joe sits there and thinks. Should Casey Jones from the first Turtles movie.
Oh, God, sorry. All right.